This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Around, out towards center ice for line A and across the line. Moved into the shot. Go! Stop! Rebound! He scores! Patrick Laine! Rebound popped right to him! And we're tied at two. Travis Dermott now up the middle of the ice for Nylander into where the slot near side of the shot. Stop! Rebound! They score! Alex Kerfoot off the post, maybe off Hellebuck's back and in, and Toronto's regained the lead. It's 3-2 for the Maple Leafs.
Shots.
Right off the faceoff, a shot, they score. Pierre Engvall through some screen and traffic, and it's 4-2 Toronto. They've regained their two-goal lead. Loose puck at center ice. Shifley now motors his way inside the Toronto end. Shifley shooting, scores! Mark Shifley at the end of that penalty will tie it at three. A huge goal for Winnipeg in this second period. Up top now on the far side. It's played there for Matthews. For Berry, near side Marner. Slap shot, stop, rebound, they score. John Tavares or Mitch Marner. It's a power play goal and a two-goal lead again for Toronto at 5-3. Nice, that'll do it. Hockey game is over tonight. Winnipeg Jets have lost five in a row at home. And in the first of two meetings with Toronto, they fall in defeat here to the Maple Leafs. The final score here tonight, the Toronto Maple Leafs 6, the Winnipeg Jets 3.
Our good buddy Paul Edmonds with the call from Thursday night's disappointing home loss to the hated Toronto Maple Leafs. As Paul mentioned, five in a row losers the Jets are on home ice. They look to become road warriors again this afternoon as they'll face the Minnesota Wild in St. Paul. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say Happy New Year and good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show alongside Dave Minuk, alongside Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We're with you this morning until 10 a.m., getting you ready for this afternoon's Jets Wild game, the second contest in a two-week period, I guess, on this Saturday afternoon. I guess they love these Saturday afternoon games down there in St. Paul, gentlemen. Winnipeg Jets hope for a similar result to what they had 2 weeks ago, because the results have not been great other than that game and the game on Tuesday night in Colorado. This Jets team struggling as of late. 3-6-1 in their last 10 games. They go 1-2 since our last program last Sunday on this station. Gentlemen, good to see you. Happy New Year to you both. I've been away.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Yeah, you just said it. I mean, the Jets basically just have to duplicate what they did 2 weeks ago, right? 6-0. That was one of the more dominating performances that we've seen from the Jets. And we know, guys, that the Jets are basically lights out when it comes to afternoon games, Connor Hellebuck especially. And
so far this year, absolutely.
Right. And, you know, that's been the topic of discussion here in Winnipeg lately, the play of Connor Hellebuck. And yes, guys, I mean, you know, the first couple of goals, I would say the fifth goal that obviously Hellebuck puts in, you know, those were rough goals, and part of the reason why Hellebuck was pulled because he didn't have a good game, lets in five on 17 shots, and part of that is because you know that he's most likely going to play against Minnesota, so, you know, you give Lauren Brossoit, you know, a period. Brossoit hasn't played that much, but, you know, going back to the game that you mentioned on New Year's Eve, I mean, the Colorado Avalanche were absolutely all over the Jets, and Connor Hellebuck was the reason they were in that game and the reason they won that game. So I think people have to take a step back and not have this recency bias after every single game, because Hellebuck is the Jets MVP. Is he playing a little bit below what we've come to expect this year? Absolutely. But from game to game, you can't hail the guy as the MVP and then absolutely chastise him after one bad game.
Well, that's the problem with the Winnipeg Jets, though, this season in a nutshell, though, Ezzy, to your point, and I agree with you, I mean, as Connor Hellebuck goes, so go the Winnipeg Jets.
Yes.
And that's the problem.
A big problem.
Yeah, that's the problem that everyone's been pointing to, really, since the Jets had that incredible month of November where Hellebuck was playing otherworldly. And everyone said, yes, but, and the but is now here right now, and nobody else has been able to, the other players haven't been able to elevate their game to compensate for the fact that Connor Hellebuck's game has lessened. And it's no surprise that Connor Hellebuck's game has lessened, because players can't play at that level for an 82-game season. It just doesn't happen. It's called regression to the mean for a reason. It's because it's a statistically proven phenomenon that happens.
Well, look at Pekka Rinne. Look at Andre Vasilevsky. I mean, you're talking about the elite goaltenders. Braden Holtby. Remember, Braden Holtby was struggling big time heading into the playoffs 2 years ago. Yeah. And then obviously, you know, Philip Grubauer wasn't good in those first two games. Was that against Columbus?
Columbus.
Yeah. In the first round. And then Holtby comes in and the rest is history. They win their first ever cup. But you're absolutely right, Drew. And you've been bringing this up kind of now for, I would say, a couple of months. And obviously, every team, Dave, in the NHL relies heavily on their number one goaltender, right? Mm-hmm. There isn't a team that doesn't rely on their goaltender. But the problem is, it seems like when it comes to the Jets, when Hellebuck is a little bit off, it seems like they don't really have a chance to win. And in that game against the Toronto Maple Leafs, I mean, we played all the goal highlights. I mean, Mark Scheifele makes it a one-goal game there. You kind of got the feeling that maybe the Jets were going to tie that game up. And when it comes to the second period, you know, Blake Wheeler wasn't that happy after the game when he was asked about the style of play because, you know, the Leafs did only have 10 or 11 shots kind of midway through that period. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of towards the end of the second period, obviously, when the Leafs started to push back. But the Jets played very well for a period and a half of that game. But we know that that's not going to get it done when you're against a really good team like the Leafs. So, yes, Hellebuck lets in three goals that he would like to have back. But, you know, Lucas Sabiza makes a really bad turnover. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Jets were a bit of a tire fire in their own zone.
They were a tire fire for the majority of that game. I mean, that part of the second period where they dominated the Leafs and were able to tie the game up at two, to your point, you know, that was an impressive display by the Jets. But then you immediately saw what happened almost is that as soon as they tied the game, they sort of took their foot off the gas a little bit. The Leafs were able to, as is natural in the flow of a game, of course. This is all what happens in the flow of the game is yep. that, you know, a team gets down. They want to battle back. They're able to do so. And then immediately what happens is they exhale. And then as soon as they exhaled and the Leafs pushed back, the Jets had no answer because Connor Hellebuck wasn't able to make the saves that he would need to make to allow the Jets to again inhale and get their game back to how it was earlier in the second period, Dave.
Sure, but I mean, the problem is that, you know, that Travis Dermott goal comes a minute 17 or something like that, right after Laine ties the game. And so, and then 37 seconds later or whatever, or maybe not even 35 seconds later, is where Engvall scores to make it a 4-2 game. So those, that's really the dagger because, you know, you're right. And Wheeler wasn't wrong. Like, the Jets had the majority of the shots. Now, were they high danger shots, high danger chances? Not really. I mean, it was a lot right into the chest of Anderson. He was seeing, like, pretty much everything the entire game. So I didn't really think, like, it was like, they were peppering him with a lot of shots. They weren't peppering him with a number of high-quality shots throughout the game, like at that point. And I thought that the Laine one was, you know, it was a good play by Patrick Laine to take his own shot that kind of got blocked by the defenseman, put it into the net at a tough angle. And really, it was kind of, and again, the atmosphere was good because you had a lot of Leaf fans in the building. You had a lot of, I mean, every time the Leafs scored, it sounded like a home game.
Yeah, it did.
And so you've got, but it creates an atmosphere. Because the Jets fans, the Leafs fans are battling and that sort of thing.
It's a fun game to attend.
Right. So, and all of a sudden you've got like a, you know, it was a little bit anticlimactic because it's 2-0, but then suddenly you've got the home side ties it up. So you're thinking, okay, well, you got yourself a game. Mm-hmm. And that's really when you need your goaltender to make that critical save.
Absolutely.
And that to me was a problem. It's just the fact that they don't get that critical save. And a minute and a half later, they're now, and to your point, maybe they have taken their foot off the gas, which is a bad sign because you've just tied it. You should have the energy. But the point is that if you don't get that save, it's deflating, and then what happens.
I think part of the game on Thursday against the Leafs is you saw this difference in skill between the Leafs forwards, who are exceptionally skilled, and a Jets defense, which is, you know, has some excellent players on it. I mean, Josh Morrissey, Neil Pionk's been very good. But after that, you got to see a lot of the warts and a lot of the weaknesses of the Jets defense. And it's been something that people have been expecting for a lot of the year. And you know, a lot of these guys, the Anthony Betettos, the Lucas Spezas, they've been playing above their heads for a lot of this season. You know, and whatever you think about these guys, and I mean, I don't think that, you know, they should necessarily be playing the minutes they are, but that's the hand that's been dealt. And they've been playing pretty well, given their name on the back of their jersey and the quality of play you would expect to get from them. I think Anthony Betetto has been a pleasant surprise. But what happens is you do eventually get to see the skill disparity, and it was on display. I mean, look at the Jets defense on Thursday night. Lucas Spezza comes off waivers. You know, Carl Dahlstrom comes off waivers. You know, Anthony Betetto is a 1 year contract signing. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to see the disparity when you have some of these guys who are getting caught out on the ice against exceptionally skilled forwards, and that is part of the reason why the Leafs were able to take advantage of that.
Sure, and Carl Dahlstrom hadn't played in a game in a while, so you have to mention that. And obviously, you know, I think Lucas Sabiza has done an admirable job. I don't
think
I would say that he's an excellent second pairing defenseman. I think he's probably better suited to be a third pairing defenseman, but I think
he's filled the gap for the Jets.
Exactly. He has been a guy who has filled a gap, and that's why I think there's a really good chance you're going to see Sammy Niku in the lineup this afternoon versus the Minnesota Wild. And guys, I think it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, who he's paired up with, right? Like, is he going to play his right side and possibly be paired up with Josh Morrissey? Or is he going to be on the left side and you maybe have him paired up with Tucker Poolman? Like, and then maybe you have Josh Morrissey and Neil Pionk together. Like, I think it's going to be real interesting. Or is he maybe going to be on the third pair? And is he going to be with, you know, an Anthony Boteto? So I think it remains to be seen. But I think one of the reasons why you'll see him in there is quite simple. It's been talked about a lot. He's just more skilled than a Carl Dahlstrom or an Anthony Boteto. One of those two guys, Dave, will be the guy that comes out for Sammy Niku if he goes in, as we expect. So Niku is a guy that can obviously move the puck, but he just adds that kind of level of dynamicism, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what the Jets have been lacking from the back end a little bit. Yes, you've got Josh Morrissey, you've got Neil Pionk, who have that offensive touch. But aside from them, and obviously Kulikov is out of the lineup, he's not a guy that you expect to put up a lot of offensive numbers, but
Kulikov, Beaulieu, they're both out of the lineup. You need, at this point in time, you need to put out your most skilled team.
Right, but getting back to the goaltending, I mean, obviously, yes, the defense was exposed against Toronto. Toronto is an elite team. They can hurt you at even strength on the power play. They've got a great group of forwards. I agree with you 100%. But going back to that game on Thursday night, as Dave mentioned, you know, if you get one or two more saves from Hellebuck, which you've got the majority of the year, not the last, you know, 7 to 10 games, then, you know, you probably win that game. Let's be honest, Freddie Anderson Hellebucked the Jets, and he stopped Patrick Laine 12 times.
Yeah, but I don't even think Freddie Anderson played very well. I mean, you look at some of the Jets' goals there. I mean, so you have the Laine goal.
He was pretty
good,
Drew. When you make 46 saves, I think you have to be pretty good.
But to Dave's point, how many of those saves were grade A chances earlier
in the
game?
I'm not saying that that was the best goaltending performance I've ever seen. I'm just saying Anderson, at the very least, Anderson, you'll give me, was better than Hellebuck.
Oh, there's no question he was better than Hellebuck.
Right, and so what I'm saying is if Hellebuck is, you know, somewhere around equal or a little bit better, that's my point. And that's why I'm not as worried going into this game against the Minnesota Wild. Is this a tough road trip coming up on the East Coast? Absolutely. You've got Boston. You've got Toronto. These are, you know, top teams in the Atlantic.
Montreal on Monday night, Toronto on Wednesday, Boston on Thursday.
Yeah, and Montreal's decimated. So I'm not worried about Montreal because they're, even though Montreal beat the Jets recently, what was that, a week and a half ago or less? You know, they've got some of their best forwards out with Gallagher and Byron and Drew N. So I'm not as worried. I'm more worried about the Boston-Toronto game. But the Jets have been very successful bouncing back, especially Hellebuck.
Well, that's to your point. That's where they've been able to tread this water during this. I mean, they've been playing, you know, look, it's not sugarcoated. Their record as of late is not very good. They're 3-6-1 in their last 10 games. If you do that for the next 40 games, you're not going to be a playoff team. And we'll talk about that in the Jets schedule a little bit later on in the show. But, you know, it could have very easily been, you know, I was surprised to see Tuesday's result in Colorado. You come off the games in St. Louis on Sunday. You know, it could have easily been four losses in a row, and you know, coming after Thursday's game at home to Toronto. Instead, they are able to get that victory in Colorado, a division game, which is hugely important because those games have an extra meaning, like this afternoon's game in St. Paul has that extra meaning because you're in division and you're battling, you know, in division. But, I mean, they're right on the cusp. They're right on that knife's edge of going down the backside and the wrong side. Because 3-6-1 is not going to get it done. And you've heard about it, you know, every team goes through these lulls, and you've heard the Jets say all the right things about, you know, this is the NHL, every team's got sort of peaks and valleys. But right now the Jets are having difficulty getting out of that valley, and they really need it to start today in St. Paul before this careens way out of control and they fall out of a playoff spot. They haven't yet fallen out of that playoff spot. They're still tied for the final wild card spot. But if you keep losing and if you're not able to get some points on the board, it's going to quickly going to be that you're chasing they're chasing for the playoff spot and you're not maintaining that playoff spot.
No, there's no doubt they need the clean 2 points. And not only do they need those clean 2 points, you want to have one of those cliche 60-minute efforts, right? Like, you want to have a really good game.
You want the same effort you had 2 weeks ago in St. Paul, the 6-0 game.
I think the biggest thing also is the fact that, you know, without a guy like Andrew Copp and Adam Lowry paired together, that ability to shut down you know, Toronto's high-powered guys.
Yeah.
You know, like that. That's something that Paul Maurice just doesn't. I mean, look, Gabriel Bourque is Gabriel Bourque, and we saw Jansen Harkins get an opportunity to go up into that third line, try and help out with Lowry and Perreault. But you can just see that they're lacking that ability to really shut down the high-powered guys that are coming against them. So,
to your point, Dave, I mean, maybe our show more than any other show on the station has praised Andrew Kopp, right? Like, I think you're seeing in this last little stretch without Kopp how valuable he is to this team.
The Jets will hope to get him back on the road trip. He is traveling with the team. He is a possibility at some point on the trip. No guarantees, but the Jets certainly do miss Andrew Kopp. They miss Dmitry Kulikov, given the back end, and obviously Brian Little's status still to be determined. We'll talk about the injuries up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Paul, what can you tell us about Nathan Beaulieu's status?
He's out for a month, minimum.
Related to the previous injuries or something?
No, brand new one.
Okay.
The silver lining is the two other. He's got two breaks that he's held, that he's healed from. That will completely heal. He'll be fine. That's the positive, but he's out again.
That's Jets head coach Paul Maurice affirming, of course, that hockey players are tougher than you or I, given that Nate Beaulieu, he's out for another month, but he's also been dealing with two breaks that he's still been playing through. God, I don't even understand how people do that. I get a hangnail and I'm a little bit upset. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Gentlemen, the Jets injury bug continues on the back end. It seems like it's if it's not one player, it's another. And this time it's Nathan Beaulieu again going to be out of the lineup for a month after blocking a couple of those shots in that game in Colorado where he certainly
was five, wasn't it?
I was watching, you know, via the beauty of online technology, and I was like, ooh, 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 you know, a couple grimaces in a row as he took a couple. The one where he twisted and got it off the back, that was certainly looked painful. Jets going to be without him in their lineup. Other updates, of course, about Andrew Kopp and Dmitry Kulikov. Like I said, both Kopp and Kulikov are going to be on this road trip, this four-game trip, which starts this afternoon in St. Paul. Game time, 1 o'clock. You can hear it on TSN Radio 1290. And they're possible at some point, obviously not this afternoon, but maybe Wednesday in Toronto, maybe Thursday in Boston. Time will tell. Brian Little, no real update. He's still out of the lineup. He's skating, you know, non-contact, but it's more of an every second day sort of skating, just trying to keep his legs fresh more than is an imminent return to the lineup. The impact of the Beaulieu injury, I mean, this is a Jets defense that is patchwork at best, has been patchwork at best for most of the season. And Nathan Beaulieu, when he's been healthy, has been actually pretty solid, I find, on the back end. Not flashy, but solid. And now the Jets are going to be without him again. And this maybe gives the opportunity for Sammy Nikku, like we talked about. You have to use Nikku at this point in time, right? I mean, I know he's called up, but you're not calling him up to keep him up in the press box.
Yeah, you know, just addressing Nathan Beaulieu, obviously not a guy that you're expecting to chip in that much offensively. And, you know, at times he's struggled, and, you know, at times I don't know, you know, if he really fits well into this Jets defense. And what it does is it does give an opportunity to other defensemen, not just Sammy Nikku, but those minutes have to be spread around, right? So, yeah, we're all expecting Nikku to play this afternoon. And if he doesn't play this afternoon, it's going to be at some point on this road trip. But if I was a betting man, which I'm not, and I obviously don't have a lot of money, I would put some money down on Nikku playing this afternoon in St. Paul, Minnesota, because when you have a skilled defenseman like Nikku and you have a defense that I think is struggling in their own zone and struggling to move the puck. That's what Niku's going to do. Now, Nikku is obviously not going to solve all the Jets' problems. I mean, the Jets are going to really have to dig deep. And I do think that this next stretch coming up is maybe more important than the stretch that we just saw with all the games at home and the games against the Central Division. Because, you know, if you've been watching this year, Boston doesn't lose a lot of games. And Toronto under Sheldon Keefe has been lights out. I mean, we just saw them 2 nights ago at Bell MTS Place, right, Dave? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Nathan Beaulieu is with all due respect, he is replaceable. I mean, mm-hmm. he's a depth defenseman for the Jets. Has he done a good job? Yeah, he's played about half the games for the Jets, but I do think there are more skilled defensemen on this roster, and if Dmitry Kulikov is healthy, it's possible that Beaulieu would be kind of that seventh defenseman, right? Because Betedo, I think, has been better than him.
Fair enough.
So I think Niku will come back, and you know, Beaulieu, obviously, you know, we expect him to be on track. He's not going to be out that long. He'll miss something like 8 to 10 games. But, you know, this is going to be a tough stretch coming up against these really good offensive teams. And, you know, Niku, it looks like, is finally going to get his opportunity to play a significant role on the Jets.
And, you know, honestly, from watching Sammy's first game back with the Moose, I think it was on Sunday, last Sunday, he looked rusty and he wasn't happy with his game. We talked about it with him after the game and he was just like, you know, you could see that it was just not the, you know, he'd been off a month.
Yeah.
And so it was one of those things that, you know, you can train all you want, but it's just like, it's a tough thing to get back into game shape. And so
got the timing down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you know what, by Tuesday night's game, the New Year's Eve afternoon game, whatever you want to call it, because it wasn't quite Eve at that point.
Late afternoon
game. Yeah. But he started, and forgetting about the two assists, like it was just a function of, he just looked like the Sammy Niku we were used to seeing, you know, and become accustomed to seeing. So to me, he looked ready. He really did. Like, it's funny how you'd think that one game wouldn't be sufficient. But I thought his skating was good. He seemed to be right into it and he seemed to be ready. So no, I mean, there's no question in my mind that, I mean, I've been watching Sammy Niku for a long time. There's no question he's as good as any of these guys who are currently in the Jets lineup, and he's going to help. You know, and to Ezzie's point, and Ezzie makes a valid point, Sammy Niku isn't going to go in there and solve all your team's defensive woes. But to the Jets' point, it's about those clean breakouts. It's about, you know, being able to get out of the zone, you know, and not have the puck stay in the Jets' zone and not have a guy who's incapable of really wheeling it out of there. So you've got a guy who can take that puck and who has the confidence to do it and is... And not only does he have the confidence, but he has the ability. So I think that's really critical.
So what do you do then, Dave? Do you break up Morrissey and Poolman, or do you break up Sabiza and Pionk? Like, I think it's going to be really interesting to see, because I don't think you necessarily put Niku on that third pair, because I think he's a little bit wasted if he's on that third pair.
I would agree that he's wasted on that third pair, but I think it's a good question from Ezzie. You know, I think you have to reevaluate your defensive pairs at this point.
Yes.
You have, I mean, I think you have to reevaluate everything right now. You're 3-6-1 in your last 10 games. What are you holding on to? Your penalty kill is an absolute embarrassment. What are you holding on to? You need to almost, not a clean slate, but you really need to go back to the drawing board and see how these pieces fit together. Sammy Niku as a third pairing defenseman doesn't do you any good. I mean, he does you good, but he's not going to do you as good if he's playing bigger minutes higher up in your lineup.
And I think it's interesting, right? Because I think, I don't know how many Jets fans would have looked at this roster this season and said, you're praying for Dmitry Kulikov's return. But like, the truth is that if you could actually get Niku and Kulikov into the lineup, it really is going to stabilize the Jets defensive pairings a little bit better than it is right now.
Yeah, and those two have played a little bit together, right? And I think that would probably be your second pair. Then that brings up the question of Neil Pionk. Like, that's going to be a good problem for Paul Maurice to have, right? I think, you know, when you talk about Kulikov and Pionk, that was a second pair for a long time. So then, you know, Kulikov probably becomes your third pair defenseman, I guess is what I'm saying, right?
You could easily put Niku with Morrissey. I mean, that's going to be, you know, I'm saying if you needed to, and the truth is, Sammy Niku's played on both the right and the left side. So, I mean, he's more comfortable on the right. Yeah. You know, he's a left shot guy, but he's more comfortable on the right. Because the Moose have a lot of first-year draft picks like Gavanke and Kovacevic who have come in and play on the right side, Sammy Niku's been switched over to the left side, and so he's played left, you know, probably for a handful of games this season with the Moose as you know, like I said, in addition to playing on the right side. So he could play on the left side if he had to for the Winnipeg Jets. It wouldn't be a huge issue. I mean, again, he's more comfortable on the right, and especially at the NHL level, you probably want a guy where he's more comfortable. So, but at the same time, if you have a need, if you want to pull, you know, Sabiza or Pionk out, then you can throw Sammy Niku in. So I'm just saying, like, to me, he's a guy you want. You know, if you don't want to take Poolman or Pionk out of the first and second pairing, then put Sammy Niku in, and then you've got, that's a decent top four: Morrissey, Poolman, Pionk, and Niku.
I agree with you. I mean, I think Spezza, you know, he's not suited. I mean, he's not best suited as a second pair defenseman, and he's been forced into that role. And I mean, like I said, I think in the last segment, he's given the Jets more than they could, probably could have hoped for a guy coming off the waiver wire.
Who Lucas Sabisa as a third pairing defenseman, I have no problem with. Then he's playing, you know, his 12 to 14 minutes. He's not. I don't think you're overplaying him.
Yeah.
And I think, again, these are good problems to have. And, you know, Dmitry Kulikov, I don't expect to play on this road trip. He might. I would expect Andrew Kopp to be back before Dmitry Kulikov. I think you'd agree with that, Dave, just based on the original timeline, of Kulikov being out to the All-Star break.
That's right.
But obviously, guys come back earlier than expected. So, you know, maybe, you know, Paul Maurice does have the ability to put Kulikov in, even though, you know, he hasn't played a lot of games. So you wonder.
Yeah,
you don't
want to take a risk, right?
Exactly. So these are all good problems to have. When you have Niku and Kulikov to draw from, your defense is going to be a lot better. That's why, you know, when you throw in an
Dahlstrom
Andrew
and
Kopp.
Dahlstrom and Boteto are better suited as, you know, guys coming out of off of the press box.
Well, and that was always the, you know, the vision, I believe, of Kevin Cheveldayoff, was that, you know, guys like Anthony Boteto and Carl Dahlstrom were going to be your seventh and eighth defensemen. But when you don't have Kulikov, you don't have Beaulieu, and then you have the injuries to Sammy Niku earlier in the season, that's,
When Beaulieu and Niku are both out of your lineup to start the year, that's why you acquire Carl Dahlstrom off waivers. You never expected to have to acquire him. He was just a function of the injuries the Jets were suffering at the end of training camp.
Right, and, you know, on the topic of, you know, Boteto, I mentioned him earlier. I think this has been talked about many times before around the Jets. Like, they're talking about this is the best hockey that he's played in his career, because he's always been that kind of depth guy when you talk about, you know, his time on Nashville and Minnesota. So obviously, yeah, Boteto, he's pretty reliable. You're not going to get a lot of offense from him, but he does the job.
Through 40 games, you know, 41 games now, the Jets have gotten more out of Anthony Boteto than anyone would have said possible. All warts included. You know, his warts are his warts. He is what he is as a hockey player. The Jets have been able to gain value from him and from his play more than anyone would have expected, for better or worse. Same thing with Lucas Spezza and his time in the lineup. But if you're able to get a guy like Sammy Niku, who's finally healthy and he's, you know, finally sort of got that conditioning, you know, issue, not issue, but he's got the conditioning ready where he's ready to play a top four role at the NHL level. This is now the time. You got to start riding your horses. You don't have tomorrow. You can't wait for anymore. You're 3-6-1 in your last 10. You're right on the cusp of a playoff spot. You need to start riding your horses, especially on the back end.
I can't wait for 4 hours from now for Dave Minuk to tweet out Niku Fried.
I think to Drew's point, the fact is that you've got Colorado. You know, they haven't been firing on all cylinders. They're 4-5-1 in their last 10. But they still have a buffer, right? They're still 52 points to the Jets 47. And now Dallas has won 4 straight. They're at 52 points.
Yeah.
You know, the Blues have actually lost a couple of games that, you know, even though they were on that hot streak. So they're at 58. And you've got Minnesota at 43. So to your point and why it's such an important game, because you really don't want Minnesota only two. You can just create some nice division here.
6 points.
Try and stay with, maintain your position behind, just behind those guys. And that's okay. It's not the end of the world to be behind them as long as you're maintaining. But the fact is, you just can't afford to have a bad game today. You really need to get this road trip off to the right start. And I think part of that is seeing some lineup changes, to your point, Drew, because what you've been doing so far has been maintaining, treading water, but now you're taking on water. And at this point in the season, you can't afford to. You got to bail out the boat. Sammy Niku, he's going to bail out the boat.
When we come back, Scott Billick of the Winnipeg Sun joins us for more Winnipeg Jets talk. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve as part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, bright and early. The best part of waking up is Illegal Curve on your radio. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. That's IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We bring in our good friend from the Winnipeg Sun, Scott Billick, to talk more about the Winnipeg Jets. Scotty, good morning. Thanks for waking up bright and early. A happy new year to you and yours.
You as well. I was hoping I was going to get some danger pay for this.
were you expecting to get any pay? Because, I mean, danger pay indicates that you're expecting a top-up.
Yeah, so, Scott, we don't get paid, so I don't know how you get paid.
No, yeah. I was hoping to get 10% off a Legal Curve sandwich. So that's
we can
all.
Make
that's
we, all. We can make that happen. We can give you a 10% discount on that. That's no problem. the budget. We'll talk to our accountants, but the budget I think allows for that.
All right, sounds good.
Scotty obviously brought you on to talk about the Jets' big game this afternoon in St. Paul, Minnesota, against the Wild. You know, you look at this Jets team. You know, 3-6-1 in their last 10. The struggles have been well documented. You know, is this sort of an opportunity now for Paul Maurice? You know, he's going to, you assume, bring Sammy Niku into the lineup.
Yeah.
Is this sort of an opportunity for him to maybe look at his forward group and look at his defensive group and maybe begin to retool and rejig it after it's been so consistent for the last number of weeks? I mean, are the Jets sort of in need of a bit of a refresh right now?
Yeah, I would say certainly, at least on the defensive side, you know, after I guess it was Thursday's game against the Leafs, there was some glaring issues on the back end, and that probably had kind of been a long time coming, and it needed to be addressed, and maybe just needed some changes. And so, yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, on forward, it's tough. I mean, you know, you look at that top unit, Scheifele's line, and the way that Scheifele, Connor, and Laine are all producing right now, I'm not sure you really want to break up that line right now. I mean, I suppose you could. But the amount of points that line's actually producing is quite good. It's just, yeah, you know, they're not winning games because there's some issues with the, you know, team defense, some issues on the blue line, some issues with giveaways, some issues with even goaltending right now, which isn't something that you know, have really experienced this year with this team, because Connor Hellebuyck had been so good. And you know, I still think he is a very good goaltender. It's just, you know, when you have some of the giveaways like you had on Thursday and stuff like that, and then there's some of the goals. I mean, one of the giveaways was his own giveaway. It was just a bad goal. I mean, you know, just puck management as a whole has kind of been an issue for this team, and they're just not getting those lucky bounces, I suppose, that are kind of help them before they're on the negative side of those bad bounces. And so, yeah, you know, there is certainly room. I think Sam Niku for sure is one. You know, everybody's going to question his defense, but he's a dynamic defenseman. And I think that's where you need to look at a guy like that to see if he can kind of, you know, move the needle a little bit on the back end. And then, you know, maybe put Josh Morrissey and Neil Pionk together and see what that looks like. And he might be playing those guys quite a bit against the other team's best and whatnot, but I mean, you need to probably, you know, start looking at least on the back end to see what you can do to improve the team. I mean, you know, when you've only won three of your last 10 and you're, you know, you're clinging to, you know, that playoff picture, you want to kind of right the ship if you can. And I think that starts with certainly some lineup tweaks.
Scotty, we got to talk about Patrick Laine. 13 shots on Thursday night is just absolutely ridiculous. In your colleague Paul Friesen's column, Snapshots column, he writes that Patrick Laine thought he could have 10 goals in that game against the Leafs. And, you know, you mentioned all the issues that the Jets have. You mentioned, you know, they've only won 3 of their last 10 games. But it seems like, to me at least, Laine is playing his best hockey of the year, maybe of his career. And he always seems to save his best against the Toronto Maple Leafs going back to his rookie year. So based on what you've seen, you know, over the last, let's say, you know, couple of weeks, are you expecting Patrick Laine to go on a little bit of a goal-scoring run?
Well, yeah, and I think you kind of have. I mean, you look at his goal scoring over the last, I wrote the game day page today, and I can't remember for what it is, though. But, you know, he's got, I think it was 6 goals in his last 8 games, maybe something like that.
He's already on a run.
Well, yeah, and I think that's kind of it. And you don't really, you know, you're maybe not noticing as much because Kyle Connor's got 7 goals in his last 6 games, and Mark Scheifele's got 22 points in his last 14, and And so, you know, maybe he gets in. And you've looked at, viewed Laine this year as this assist machine, and he was just kind of starting to now come on with the goals that he's gotten. So, but yeah, I think so. I mean, I think, you know, it was very interesting. Last thing, you know, you think of a guy who maybe shoots a lot, and you think of like a guy like Alexander Ovechkin, who you can get off a lot of shots in a game. And I really thought that was kind of what Patrick Laine's game looked like the other night. He was really just trying to take it into his own hands and make something of it. And, you know, the Jets would go down, they were down 2-0, and then, you know, he helped them kind of get back into that game, and then they, you know, come back and, you know, they're down again. And so there's a lot going on there. And I thought, you know, he found the space that he needed to get those shots off. And he made some of those shots. If you look at his goal, nice little move, gets the shot off, rebound, comes back to him, puts it in from a tight angle. So yeah, to say if he's playing very good hockey right now. I think he's trying, you know, to be that kind of that game breaking player that, you know that he can be, but he's doing it in a way that's different than just kind of standing in his office on the power play. You know, he's getting his points on 5-on-5, which is what you kind of want to see from Laine. And then he's also getting those shots off too on the power play. He just couldn't get it to go a couple times the other night. So yeah, he's playing well. You know, you like to see a player of his kind of ilk, I suppose, you know, getting 13 shots a game. I mean, a guy who shoots as well as he does, if he's creating that kind of offense, I mean, he's going to score more times than not just with the way that he plays, with the accuracy that shot can have, the speed, how it can kind of fool goaltenders. So, I mean, yeah, more of that from Patrick Laine would obviously be helpful from this team. I don't know if that was a career high in shots in game. I'm sure it was.
Yeah, it was.
Certainly, yeah, exactly. Certainly a season high. And, yeah, you know, he obviously gets up for big games like that. You'd like to see that probably this afternoon, you know, against a Minnesota Wild team where, you know, the last time out, I mean, the Jets kind of pieced it on. You can see kind of a repeat performance like that tonight, you know, this afternoon. The Jets can bounce back, and they kind of need to do that. You know, you might just kind of maybe need this game this afternoon to, you know, kind of maybe beat up on a team that, you know, you've beat up on before and kind of start feeling better again about your game, because you haven't had a lot lately to feel better about.
You know, Scott, the Jets have the 15th ranked power play in the league. They have also got the 31st ranked PK. I read an article that said the Jets defense went down a man is the worst the NHL has seen in the past decade. You wrote about it in your game day five keys to the game. You talked about the Jekyll and Hyde aspect of these special teams. So maybe not necessarily the power play so much, but on the PK, what are you seeing that is just going so wrong for this team that it's, like I said, historically bad right now?
Historically bad is right. You know, you can read some of the tweets online, and those certainly suggest that. And then that's, you know, that's how it looks. I mean, that's the way it is. In terms of what's wrong, I mean, I think losing Andrew Kopp was a huge problem for that team. I think he and Adam Lowry just were able to keep a certain defensive structure at the two top on the points there. And there's just really no confidence right now. You know, I think it's, 14 for the last 26 they've allowed on the power play over the last 10 games. That's really bad. I mean, it's just,
Scott.
Well, the problem is, you know, your power play has been improved, and you look over the last, I think it's 10 games, and it's 31% or something like that. You know, that's a really good number for your power play, but then you go on the penalty kill in the game and you give up a goal and kind of, you know, null and voids it, right? Like, it's got to be frustrating for the team that, I didn't think that the power play goal that was scored against them the other night was, you know, a product of, you know, I suppose bad coverage or anything like that. It was just, you know, it was a bad goal that probably shouldn't have gone in, but, you know, you think that those things maybe sometimes snowball themselves to a point where it's like, you know, you allow a goal like you did the other night. It's 4-3 at the time. You know, things are starting to look up again. You're mounting another comeback. Mark Scheifele scores a nice goal. And then all of a sudden, Mitch Marner scores on the power play, and it just and the way that he scored, and it's just deflating. And then it's not just Connor Hellebuyck; it's just when the penalty kill doesn't get the job done, especially lately. It's just like when you go into a power play knowing that you have a 50-50% chance to come out of it on top. I mean, that's not very, you know, in the grand scheme of the NHL, you know, that's not a good number. I mean, it's a horrible number. And, you know, Paul Maurice has talked about taking one at a time and just kind of feeling good about yourself, and it's just not happening right now. And I don't know what you need to do. I mean, you don't really want to, you know, be putting Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler on that PK unit, but maybe you really need to just put them there to have that structure right now until, you know, Andrew Copp maybe comes back or whatever you got to do. I mean, you know, Copp might be coming back on this road trip. He's going to travel. Whatever it's going to take right now to stem the bleeding at this point, I think you need to take those, I guess precautions, you could say, and kind of figure it out, because it's a big glaring hole in your lineup and hasn't been addressed in almost a month now. And it just keeps getting worse, or it's staying very bad, I suppose. You know, they haven't really dipped below 50%, but you know, 50% is a horrible number on the penalty kill, and that's just the way it is. And so, yeah, something needs to happen. Something needs to change. I don't exactly know what it is, but you know, it's going to start with just one good penalty kill. I mean, they were 3-for-4 on the night, and you know, I guess you can be, you know, kind of happy about that. But at the same time, it's just like every game you're giving up at least one goal, it seems, and that's just not going to cut it at this point of the season.
Scott Billick is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290, the Jets in the Wild, this afternoon, 1 o'clock puck drop, a game you can hear live on this fine radio station. Scotty, last question for you. You are one of the media members who was assembled for Kevin Cheveldayoff's State of the Jets address on this previous road trip, yeah, for lack of better phrasing. And, of course, Dustin Byfuglien's name was front and center. And, you know, I guess, you know, it was sort of asked, you know, is Dustin Byfuglien welcome back to this team if and when he's healthy and if and when he decides he wants to play hockey? And Kevin Cheveldayoff, in as he only can, sort of, you know, gave a very elongated answer to that. But from my perspective, he never actually said the words, yes, of course he's welcome back. Am I reading too much into that? Or was that sort of a glaring absence from his answer?
No, you know, I think, well, like anything with Kevin Cheveldayoff, it can be calculated, and it's, you know, like you even alluded to, sometimes he says a lot but doesn't say much at all. You know, I actually thought he was, you know, reasonably candid in that interview. I mean, I sat there, and you know, he was. Yeah, I think there's just, you know, yeah, I thought he had some good answer. I know not everybody's going to agree with that. I mean, you know, there's been a lot of, I don't want to call it smoke and mirrors with him, but, you know, it's just a lot of, you know, there's times where he hasn't said a lot. I mean, I think if you can even look as most recently as that interview he had in San Jose on the road, where, you know, he came out and, you know, nobody really kind of understood why he came out to talk about Dustin Byfuglien, because he really said nothing. You know, I thought if you kind of listen to what he said this time around, I mean, it's not that they wouldn't welcome him back. They just, you know, they want to have a Dustin Byfuglien back in the lineup that's not, you know, that's game ready, that's ready to go, that wants to play, that's fully healed, that's whatever it is. I mean, I think there is a world where, yes, they will accept him back into the dressing room, into the lineup, into the fold, into the team, and whatever it is. But there are parameters that need to be met. Dustin Byfuglien needs to be in game shape. Dustin Byfuglien needs to want to play hockey. Dustin Byfuglien needs to, I don't know, I guess even this year with how this team has kind of taken on a new, I suppose, persona in the room and that sort of thing, he has to be willing to, you know, and this is my opinion, but I think he has to be willing to want to integrate him, you know, into that kind of thing and take on that persona and how this team is kind of, you know, I suppose, for the lack of a better word, you know, rallied together throughout all this stuff. I mean, I think there's, you know, if you're in the room with this team, there is a sense of unity. I mean, you can, you know, it's palpable at times. You can feel it. And I think that, you know, that's a big thing. And I'm not suggesting the speculation that there was a rift between him or anybody like that. What I'm saying is this team has, there's just a different way that they're doing things this year. And it's brought on by the leadership of Blake Wheeler and whoever else is kind of, you know, in on this stuff about how they're just kind of playing a certain way and have a certain mindset and that sort of thing. And so, yeah, I think, again, to answer the question, I think there is a way that he is welcome back into the room. I think, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff basically said it, is he has to fit a certain criteria to be back in the room. And I think, you know, it's very possible that he could be, because at the end of the day, I mean, this is about winning hockey games. And, you know, Dustin Byfuglien, especially if you look at the defense right now, Dustin Byfuglien makes your team better at the end of the day. I mean, even, you know, at maybe some of his not most peak physical condition and stuff like that, whatever it was, I mean, Dustin Byfuglien was still a game changer in terms of just what he can do. It's the physicality he brings. He can help the power play. He can score 5-on-5. He can do all these things. He's a good defenseman. He's a good player. And so I think at the end of the day, if you're trying to win, you're trying to make the playoffs, you're trying to make a push in the playoffs, you want the best players available. And you know, he would be a good option if everything kind of lines up. So, yeah, to make, you know, I've gone and rambled on a lot here, but I think...
Channeling your inner Kevin Cheveldayoff, are you?
Well, maybe. But I think there is a world where he is welcome back, and, you know, well, you can let bygones be bygones and blah, 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 and things would be fine. So it's going to take some work, though, on Dustin Byfuglien's part to show that he wants to be back. And if he does that, they can, you know, eventually kiss and make up and do it at least for the business side of hockey and for the winning side of hockey.
Scott Billick covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Sun. Scotty, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll let you go get back to bed right now.
I'll see. Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. Have a good show.
Thanks, Scotty. We'll talk to you soon. When we come back, we look ahead at the Jets week to come. We talk about this afternoon in St. Paul and then the 3-game trip out east. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
At the line for Beaulieu, on for Nicholas Shore. So Connor Hellebuck, whose first NHL shutout on the road came in this building, picks up his third shutout of the season. A 31 save performance by Connor Hellebuck. And what a night for Captain Blake Wheeler as he picks up 2 points, moves ahead of Ilya Kovalchuk. And Blake Wheeler now the franchise leader in points as the Jets win this one 6-0.
That was 2 weeks ago. The Winnipeg Jets defeating the Minnesota Wild Saturday afternoon, 1 o'clock. They handed the Wild a 6-0 defeat. The Jets look for a similar result this afternoon, a game you can hear live, of course, on TSN Radio 1290. Start of a 4-game trip for the Winnipeg Jets, a very important 4-game trip. Division battle to get it started before they go out east to face the Habs, the Leafs, and the Bruins. I mean, all 4 games are obviously important, but I think we talked about it earlier in the show. Today's game against the Wild, you're able to, again, extend that lead you have over the Wild with a victory, get it back to a 6-point margin between the Jets and then their next closest competitor, which is the Wild. The Predators continue to struggle. I mean, the Jets have to know that there's a bit of a sour taste in their mouth from Thursday night's defeat. This is a key Central Division matchup. Really, all Central Division matchups from here until the end of the season are going to be that important.
Yeah, and we haven't talked a lot about it, I guess, leading up to this game. We talked about it more leading up to the game 2 weeks ago. You know, the Wild beating the Jets all 5 games last year, right, Dave?
Yeah, the Jets are 2-0 already against the Wild this season.
Right, though. And that's why we're not talking about it as much because, yeah. So, I mean, the Wild have had success against the Jets, but, you know, I really do expect a much better effort and a much better defensive effort. And I think there is something to be said for these afternoon games, and the Jets' record in afternoon games has been very good, yeah, especially Connor Hellebuck. Yeah, and so, you know, I think there's something to be said about the fact that this game is on the road as well, because the Jets do have some games coming up at Bell MTS Place, Nashville being the first one. That's an afternoon game. That's on a Sunday.
Next Sunday, yeah.
Right? So, I mean, I do think that the Jets, you know, are I think they're due for a much better effort. And, you know, not to say that the Minnesota Wild aren't going to have, you know, a response. Because as you mentioned, I mean, 6-0, guys, that's embarrassing. I mean, the Wild were embarrassed. Another thing to mention, too, is the Wild haven't played since New Year's Eve. They've been off the last 3 days. So they've been practicing. The Wild are ready. Like, they are in St. Paul. Well, they've been in St. Paul for a while now. But, you know, it's not like they played. Not only did they not play yesterday, they haven't played in 3 days. So I think there's something to be said. Yeah. So I would expect a much better start from the Minnesota Wild. Because you remember, I mean, the Jets were all over the Wild in that game. From basically the puck drop until the end of the game. That game was never in doubt, Dave. So, you know, yes, the Wild are going to put a bigger fight up. And I don't expect this to be a 6-0 game or a 5-0 game. I expect this game to be a lot closer. And these are just absolutely crucial points.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because Minnesota had been lights out at home. I think they had, going into that game against the Jets 2 weeks ago, they'd only had one regulation loss, which was their home opener.
Yes.
And up until that point, they hadn't lost in regulation since. Mm-hmm. Then the Jets beat them, and now they have two more losses subsequent to the Jets' loss at home.
Yeah, they're 10-1-3, I think, entering that Jets game 2 weeks ago. Right. Now they've lost three in a row, I think, at home ice.
So, and they've lost two overall in a row. So this is a Minnesota team that, you know, kind of rose up out of, you know, the basement, and the team that really has surprised everybody because nobody anticipated them being at this point in the season this close to the playoff line and ahead of teams like, well, ahead of Nashville specifically.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody anticipated that. So I think the Jets have an opportunity here. I think that Minnesota's played really above their head a little bit this season. I think Bruce Boudreau deserves to be commended for what he's been able to get out of his team. You know, he's shown that he can, you know, he's still a pretty good coach, that he can get this much out of this squad. So, I think that's a good thing. I think that the Jets have an opportunity here, though really, they get up for these games against Minnesota, and we know, like to your point, as they didn't have a great record against them last season, but so far this year they've been able to play pretty well against their Central Division rival.
Yeah, and you know, stylistically, guys, this game's going to be a lot different because even though Minnesota's kind of middle of the pack, you know, like the Jets when it comes to, you know, goals for, they do give up a lot of goals, actually, but when you're talking about, you know, power play, special teams, they're not anything special, but you know, the Wild actually are at the top of the league when it comes to high danger chances against. So when you're talking about the Leafs, they give up a lot of high danger chances. Mm-hmm. So I don't expect the Jets to have anywhere close to the amount of shots that they did against Freddie Anderson. So that's something to talk about, and it's also something to consider. And I do think this game is going to be a lot tighter. I don't think you're going to see, you know, 9 goals in this game. You probably might not even see 6 goals. But, you know, I do think it bodes well for the Jets, who obviously want to start playing better in their own zone, and they hope that, you know, leads to better things you know, as they go forward for the rest of this road trip.
When we come back, Anthony LaPanta, Minnesota Wild play-by-play broadcaster, joins us to set up this afternoon's contest from the Wild perspective. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290 alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
With the Jets and Wild doing battle this afternoon at 1 o'clock in St. Paul, Minnesota, we're pleased to welcome to the program Minnesota Wild play-by-play broadcaster Anthony LaPanta. Anthony, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, anytime, guys.
Always appreciated, Anthony. Obviously, a big Central Division matchup this afternoon between the Jets and the Wild. We know what happened 2 weeks ago when the Jets went into St. Paul and handed the Minnesota Wild a 6-0 defeat on home ice. You know, I know it's an every game is the game that matters most sort of league, but, you know, do you think that from the Wild perspective, the lingering distaste of that 6-0 defeat is providing a little extra motivation entering into this afternoon's contest?
Perhaps a little. I mean, I think you could throw on top of it the one-sided win Winnipeg had when the teams met in Winnipeg earlier this year, too. It's been kind of strange the way this series has gone between these clubs. It seems like it's all or nothing one way or the other. I mean, a couple of years ago, the Wild couldn't buy a win against the Jets. Then they hammered them in the regular season, but got pounded in the playoffs. I mean, prior to this year, the Wild had won six in a row against Winnipeg in regular season games, and now the two this year have both been one-sided for the Jets. That might provide a little motivation. I think the bigger motivation for Minnesota really is Winnipeg's in front of them in the standings. The Wild got off to a terrible start this year, went 1-6 out of the gates, and they've been fighting an uphill battle ever since. So every single time you face somebody in front of you, that game carries a tremendous amount of weight. The Wild have played better hockey and climbed back into a relevant position, but if you're going to make this resurgence be real, be worth anything, these are the kind of games you have to win.
You know, Anthony, we talked about this last segment. The Wild haven't played since New Year's Eve. They lost that game to the Toronto Maple Leafs, so they've been off for the last three games. Is that something that you think is going to factor in to this afternoon's game? We know that afternoon games can be a little bit different. Do you think that's something that is talked about too much, or do you think that's going to be maybe something that benefits the Wild today?
I think the bigger issue is the second point you made, the afternoon game rather than the days off. I mean, at this point in the season, anytime you get a stretch of 2 or 3 days off, it's welcome. Everybody's beat up. Everybody's banged up. Everybody's tired. Everybody's fighting through something. And anytime you get a chance to really get away, and as you guys well know, when you're in the grind of the season, you really only get a break if you have multiple days off between games. Otherwise, you're immediately into prep for the next opponent. And most times it's a practice on the day in between. In this case, the Wild got New Year's Day off. Then they had January 2nd, they had an outdoor practice, and, you know, that's more of a, even though they get some work done, it's a little bit more of a novelty thing for fans. But then yesterday had a good, hard, intense practice, and now they should be. So I don't think the days off should matter as much as any time you play a day game, it's just a disruption of the normal routine. Most of these guys are creatures of habit with the every day is structured where they eat at the same time, they rest at the same time, they do the same things in the locker room, and anytime you throw that off a little bit with a day game, you just never quite know. And to be honest, I mean, both of these teams have some veteran guys on it, Minnesota probably more so than Winnipeg in terms of that their go-to guys are a little older, a little bit more mature bodies. Sometimes you wonder, just they respond the same way. So for some guys, it seems to help. For other guys, it seems like sometimes it takes them a period to get the legs going.
Anthony, just a quick question about the first line. I mean, the Wild's goal-scoring struggles, they've been well-documented. Based on yesterday's practice lines, Jordan Greenway is going to be up on that top line with Eric Staal and Matt Zuccarello. Is this just Bruce Boudreau trying to get that first line going?
A little bit, but it's more just because Jason Zucker's out. So they've been trying to find somebody to take that spot. When they went through a stretch for about 3 weeks where not only were they without Jason Zucker, they were also without Mikko Koivu, they were also without Joel Eriksson-Ek. So you took one guy off of each of the top three lines. So when that was the case, there was some major shuffling going on, and Boudreau had thrown Zach Parise up there on that top line with Staal and Zuccarello, basically just loading up one line, saying we've got to have one go-to scoring line. Well, then when Eriksson-Ek and Koivu came back, he was able to restore the second, third, and fourth lines to what they had been for really about a month and a half stretch, where Minnesota was playing great hockey. And as crazy as it sounds, from November 2nd to New Year's Eve, so almost 2 full months, the Wild were the highest scoring team in the NHL. And this is a team and a franchise we've been talking about for about 6 years, that they don't score, they have to win with defense, they don't have any go-to goal scorers. But for that stretch, nobody scored more goals in the NHL. And they were doing it in spite of the fact they had major injuries. Now, the last two games, they couldn't score against the Islanders and the Leafs. And, you know, the Islanders came in and played a really good defensive game on the 29th, and then the Leafs are just rolling. I know Winnipeg just saw them the other night. I mean, right now that club is, they might be playing as well as anybody in the league. So I think this time it's a little bit more of still just trying to find the right guy to throw in there until Jason Zucker gets back. He originally tried Ryan Donato, I think partially with the hopes of, well, that allows me to keep all the other lines intact. Donato had been playing well, but he, you know, probably not ready to be in a top three role. and nor has Jordan Greenway. But right now, I think it's just let's try somebody else, and we got to figure out a way to bridge the time until Zucker gets back, which, you know, we're still probably talking a month away from that time.
You know, Anthony, on Wednesday, the NHL made a big announcement saying that the 2021 Winter Classic will be held. It's coming to Minnesota for the Wild's 20th season in the NHL. So, two-parter. Number one, how much excitement is there in Minnesota that they're finally getting the Winter Classic? It'll be their second outdoor game. And secondly, who do you think the opponent will be? Because I know there's thousands of Jets fans that are hoping that it would be the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, you know, I'm actually in the same camp as a lot of those Jets fans. I think that would be a great matchup. When you start to think about who else makes sense as a rival-type game for Minnesota, well, you know, Chicago is near the top of the list, but we played them here in a Stadium Series game. Dallas has become a pretty big rivalry, and there's a natural tie with the Stars, but they were in it this year, so you're not going to put them in it. Colorado is a team that we've faced in the playoffs. There's some animosity. There's some star power, but they've got an outdoor game this year. St. Louis is another division rival that there's been playoff series between the clubs. I don't know that they necessarily say star power, but you got a team that just won the cup. But they just had an outdoor game the previous year. So I think it's a, to me, Winnipeg makes as much sense as anybody. And, you know, I don't know if it's a, I can't imagine there's a reluctance just because it's a team, a Canadian team. I mean, we've seen other Canadian teams in the Winter Classic, and we should. And I think the rivalry between the Wild and Jets is great. I think the way Jets fans would add to that day. And, you know, I mean, I just think it would be great to showcase a couple markets that maybe don't get some of the national attention that some of the other teams I just mentioned, that they seem to get, you know, Chicago, and we've seen all the Eastern U.S. teams. I just think it might be nice, and they did it a little bit this year with Dallas and Nashville, but maybe to showcase a couple markets that don't get the national attention that they would otherwise get in terms of their players and their success if they were playing in, say, New York or Boston or Toronto or something like that.
Anthony LaPanta is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Anthony is the play-by-play broadcaster for the Minnesota Wild, the Wild and the Jets this afternoon. 1 p.m. puck drop here on this fine radio station. Anthony, the Minnesota Wild have given up the third most goals in the NHL this season. That's not a stat you're used to hearing as it pertains to the Wild. From your perspective, what needs to change to turn around the goals against being so high for the Wild?
Well, a big part of that's been goaltending. Their goaltending just hasn't been as good as it's been in previous years, and they've had to deal with a couple of situations there. Devin Dubnyk had an injury and then had some personal issue that he had to tend to, or he was away from the club for about a month. Al Stalock and at that time Kaapo Kähkönen came up from the minors, and they had their moments and they played well, but then, you know, had some inconsistency, and that's, you're going to get that any time that you disrupt what your normal goaltending plans were. The Wild are still in the top five in the league in terms of fewest high danger chances allowed. And to me, those are always kind of the things that tell you what's sustainable and what's not. So I think they've been defending well. I still think it could be better. It hasn't been as airtight as they've been known to play over the last few years. But they also just need to get goaltending. And, you know, the save percentage numbers would support what I'm saying. It's just they, you know, these guys, when they've had good runs here the last 6 or 7 years, it's been because they've limited chances and then they've had goaltending that's been in for sure the top half and usually the upper third of the NHL. And this year that just hasn't been the case.
Anthony, sticking with the goaltending, obviously we're all happy that Devin Dubnyk is back with the team. Dubnyk played on New Year's Eve against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Alex Stalock, of course, was in goal 2 weeks ago when the Jets defeated the Wild 6-0. Do we know who's going to start in net this afternoon, or is it still up in the air?
I'm sure they know. I don't know. The Wild play again tomorrow against the Flames here in St. Paul, so the fair assumption would be that each goaltender is going to play one of them. And I didn't ask Bruce yesterday what his plan was. My guess is that he was going to play Devin Dubnyk today and then Stalock tomorrow, but That's just my guess. It's not. I haven't confirmed that yet with the coaching staff.
I had to put you on the spot there, Anthony. Sorry.
No worries.
Anthony LaPanta is the Minnesota Wild play-by-play broadcaster. The Jets and the Wild this afternoon, a 1 o'clock puck drop. Anthony, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us for some above-average radio.
Yeah, I think you guys nail it every day.
Thanks, Anthony. Take care.
Yeah, you bet.
When we come back, we look at the Jets at the 41-game mark. That's the halfway point of the season. We'll give grades on the offense, the defense, the goaltending, the special teams, the coaching, and the front office management. Grades to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live as part of Santa Lucia Pizza. Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. A quick update from the World Junior Hockey Championships. Semifinal number one is underway. Russia just scored on the power play to take a 2-1 lead over Sweden. It's a high-scoring affair 6 minutes into that contest. You can see that game live right now on TSN television.
David Gustafsson, I think, had an assist on the first Sweden goal.
There you go. David Gustafsson, of course,
Winnipeg. Well, he won the faceoff. I don't know if he got an assist.
Fair enough. He won the faceoff. There you go. Dave Minuk providing some more
Yeah, he did get
analysis.
A point. Yeah.
Oh, there
it was
you
a really nice faceoff win, and he's absolutely been killing it in the faceoff circle.
That's what he did last year with the World Juniors, and he's only improved on that. So,
well, you got to love the Jets draft picks, right? You got Ville Heinola coming up in the other semifinal match against Team Canada. Obviously, we're hoping for a good result and a good game, but we're expecting... We're hoping, I should say, for Canada to win. But, you know, good representation from the Jets, a couple of draft picks.
And the one thing I'd say about Gustafsson that was interesting, going back to Scott Billick and the conversation they had with Kevin Cheveldayoff, is that after this, because he was originally based on the transfer agreement, he was going to go back after this
to Sweden
yeah. to play for the remainder of the season. Because he was with the Jets past December 1st, he can now be sent to
there was
the,
a clause in his contract that allows him to be sent to the Moose rather to be assigned to the Moose
because he was with the Jets long enough and basically part of the team essentially. So that's good news from their point. If they want to keep him with the Manitoba Moose could use him, I think, to add some center depth. So I think it would be good because he becomes a call-up option, obviously, at that point as well.
You know, we should mention that, you know, if you're listening to us in the car and not watching this game on TV, Nils Höglander, that last Russian goal was scored on the power play.
Yeah.
Nils Höglander is actually, if you remember, he was the player who scored the lacrosse-style goal. Mm-hmm. He's been ejected from the game, 5-minute major for a check to the head. So Russia still has about 2.5 minutes left on the power play.
Exactly. Like you said, game can be seen right now on TSN. Three and Canada and Finland coming up a little bit later on this morning before the Jets and the Wild, a 1 o'clock puck drop. Anyways, let's get to the Winnipeg Jets at the halfway point of the season. Before we do that, I should say this segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family owned and operated and been serving quality home style food since 1985. For a hot, fresh breakfast starting at 6:30 a.m. weekdays and all day long and all weekend long, visit Bernstein's at 1700 Cordon Avenue. That's in the Cordon Village Mall. The Jets today will be game number 42 on the season for the Winnipeg Jets, so they're officially at the halfway mark. Let's go through the offense, the defense, the goaltending, the special teams, the coaching, and the front office management and hand out some grades at the halfway point of the season. We start with the Jets' offense, and we're not looking at individual players. We're looking at the offense as a collective, as a macro exercise, not as a micro exercise. The Jets' offense right now, 16th in goals for in the NHL with 126. Dave Minuk, what grade would you give to the Winnipeg Jets offense through this the halfway point of the season?
I'd give them, you know, a B. They've been pretty good. We've had some guys, you know, who haven't necessarily hit the levels that we were kind of expecting. Blake Wheeler's taking a bit of a step back, obviously adapting to a new role. You have Mark Scheifele, you know, he's been a steady producer. Kyle Connor, obviously, with 21 goals. I know we're not going individually, but these are the guys who are making up the list. Patrick Laine, he had a great line yesterday. He goes, you know, when I used to be a good goal, when I was formerly a goal scorer, something to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
But he's been, you know, he's been very good this season, obviously a point-a-game player. So you've got a lot of guys who have stepped up. Neil Pionk's having a career season. He's matched his career high in points in 41 games that he had, I think, in 70-something games with the Rangers. So overall, I think the Jets have been able to produce. I think they've, you know, it earned a B in my estimation.
Yeah, Dave, I'd go B as well. And, you know, the reason why they don't get a higher grade, maybe a B plus or an A, because you mentioned, I mean, the top line of Scheifele, Connor, and Laine has been an elite top line, and I don't have to repeat all the stats and the reasons why, but you know, the Wheeler line, I think, hasn't been as dominant, but it has been very good, especially with Roslovic up there on the wings. Roslovic and Ehlers, obviously two really fast players, but it's because the Jets haven't got that production from the third and fourth lines, partially because Andrew Copp and Matty Perreault have missed some time, but the fourth line just hasn't been producing all year long, so that's why they don't get a higher grade. But when you're talking about, you know, that top line, that's an A-plus line.
A-plus line, B overall is the grade that you both are giving to the Winnipeg Jets offense. Let's look at the defense, the flip side to that. Of course, the defense for the Winnipeg Jets, 14th in goals against with 125 goals given up, a defense that has certainly been best described as patchwork for a lot of the season, given all the injuries and given a lot of the uncertainty that the Jets defense has faced this year. What grade would you give the Jets defense thus far, Mr. Ginsburg?
Yeah, I'd probably go B, maybe even as low as like a B-minus, like... The Jets have had so many different faces in the lineup this year. The entire right side is new. Dustin Byfuglien, we didn't expect that prior to the season. So, yeah, you know, Dave mentions a Neil Pionk. I mean, Neil Pionk, he's having a career year. I mean, it's just a matter of time before he, you know, sets that new career mark. And he's been really good on the power play. And, you know, earlier this show, we talked about, you know, guys like Anthony Boteto and Lucas Sabiza, Carl Dahlstrom. I mean, I think Sammy Niku is going to make that group of defensemen more dynamic. I've actually really liked Tucker Pullman's game on that top pair with Josh Morrissey. You know, Josh Morrissey, again, he's having a career year offensively, you know, has his defensive game struggled at times a little bit, yes, but he's had to, you know, compensate a little bit because he's anchoring that blue line with all these new faces. So I probably go B minus, and it has more so to probably do with the personnel, and you know, special teams, I think, has a lot to do with that as well. I think that's why
we'll get to,
you know, I can't
teams.
Really give them, but I think you have to factor that in to the Jets' struggles, because yes, you know, missing a guy like Andrew Copp hurts the penalty kill, but also the guys that they're able to put out there on the back end for the penalty kill, I think, leave something to be desired. But you know, overall, I don't think the Jets' defense is as bad as some people think. But based on who Paul Maurice has been able to put out there, and obviously, you know, we talk about Niku a lot, I think the defense will be much improved with his puck-moving ability.
Dave?
Yeah, I mean, I'm inclined to say it's funny because we've talked about how these guys have all tried to rise above their station, right? And, we've, you know, whether it's guys asking Paul Maurice about, you know, guys playing a level above where they should, you know, guys who maybe would be your seventh defenseman or are in your lineup, and guys, you know, that sort of idea. At best, you give him a C. I mean, guys, you know, Josh Morrissey struggled on a number of nights. Tucker Pullman, you know, is he ideally suited to be your top pairing right side defenseman? You know, I'm not so sure. Like, I like Tucker Pullman, don't get me wrong. I just don't know that he's your top pairing right side defenseman.
Yeah.
So I think these guys have tried to fill the roles and done an admirable job to Ezzie's point. I just think overall, when you look at the way the Jets defense has been, at best, you can give him, I think, is this about a C.
The goaltending, we know that Connor Hellebuyck has sort of been the lifeblood for this team so far this season. At times, he's the one who kept them in it for a lot of the month of November and is beginning to maybe struggle a little bit as of late. What grade would you give Connor Hellebuyck when you look at his entirety of the season right now?
Well, and you said we're not doing individual players, so I think you got to look at Hellebuyck and Brassois, right? I'd probably go B+, and if this was 3 or 4 weeks ago, I'd go A, and that's only because Hellebuck's game has fallen off a little bit, and it hasn't fallen off completely. It's been, you know, one good game, one bad game type of thing here. I mean, we talked about a couple of weeks ago, he looked pretty good against the Wild. You know, New Year's Eve, Dave, he looked pretty good against the Colorado Avalanche, making however many stops he made, 45 or 46. So I think Hellebuck's good. I'm not as worried as some people are. I think he is going to be really good this afternoon for the Wild. And Lauren Brassois has not been as good as he was last year, but I don't have, you know, concerns that he can't get the job done. But that's probably the only reason why I don't go higher, because Brassois, I think, you know, at times hasn't been as good as he was last year. And then, you know, Hellebuyck's game has fallen off a little bit. So that's why I'll go B+.
You know, look, Connor Hellebuyck is still at a 10.67 GSAA. So, I mean, like, his goal saved above average or above the expectation, whichever way you want to reference it, is still above 10. He's still, you know, been a very good goaltender. He's eighth best in the NHL in that category. So, and he's played the most games by far. He's played 34 games versus a lot of guys who are in the 20s or in the teens. So, I mean, that's obviously got to be factored in. I just think, like, you know, they haven't been like Connor Hellebuyck's been fantastic all season. We've talked about it. He's been this team's MVP, and there's no question this Jets team wouldn't be where they were if it wasn't for Connor Hellebuyck's play throughout the year. So has he had some stinky games? Of course. But, you know, I still think overall he's been an A goaltender for the Winnipeg Jets. I think Laurent Brossoit, you know, drops it down a little bit, but I'm still inclined to go A minus.
There you go. Split the difference. Well done. Special teams for the Winnipeg Jets. The power play, 15th in the NHL at 19.7%. The penalty kill, 71.2%. Dead last in the NHL. Historically bad as of late, as the phrasing likes to go. You can almost look at it in two different questions if you want to evaluate the power play and the penalty kill separate, or if you want to do a collective grade for the
well,
two.
I'll go collective because, you know, the power play was bottom 10 for the majority of the season, and it's been lights out lately, and it's finally starting to click. But yeah,
last 10 games, the power play is third in the NHL at 34.6%.
Right. And the penalty kill has been 50% as of late. So overall, if you're looking at it, you know, together, I got to go C. And the power play has probably been overall on the year, maybe a C plus or a B. But, you know, the penalty kill is probably a D.
Yeah, probably
and,
an F.
Well, and earlier in the season, it wasn't this bad, but you know that's something that's got to change, guys. Russia just scored to make it 3-1, so Sweden's in a bit of a hole here late in the first period. But you know, when you talk about you know some of the personnel coming back, Andrew Kopp's going to help. Dmitry Kulikov, you know, when he comes back, he'll be a guy that goes out on the penalty kill, guys. But you know, this just has to be better. I mean, this could end up being something that prevents the Jets from getting into the playoffs. I'm not saying that, you know, I have the Jets missing the playoffs, because before the season started, I thought the Jets were a playoff team, and I still think they can be a playoff team, but you can't have a penalty kill at 50%.
No, I'm with Ez, and I would split it up and go, I mean, right now you can't say that their PK has been anything but an F. I mean, you know, you can't have the worst penalty kill in the NHL, and again, historically bad,
yeah,
and say it's been anything but an F. I mean, it's a failure. You're not killing the penalties. So it's, to me, until you can improve that and eliminate that from your game, I mean, like as he just said, that could be the thing that costs you the playoffs. Now, again, we're looking at the whole season. So in terms of special teams, the power play obviously wasn't great, but to Ezzy's point, they've really increased what they've been able to do. So, I mean, there you got to go at least C plus to a B in the way they've, probably a C plus really, but again, they're trending it up, which is a good thing for the Jets. But again, that PK has got to improve. And again, I'll echo what Ezzy just said. I think Andrew Kopp is going to go a long way to really improving that.
Right. And, you know, I don't know if it's, you know, changing your system, if it's being more aggressive. I mean, we talked about this, what was this, 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago? And, you know, Dave and I were kind of, you know, twiddling our thumbs and scratching our heads like something has to change, because unless you're making a move and bringing in, you know, a different defenseman or more of a penalty killing specialist, whatever you want to say, like a guy like Gabriel Bork is a guy that plays a little bit on the PK. But I mean, the players are going to stay the same, right? Dave, you're talking about Adam Lowry, Andrew Kopp, Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler. I mean, these guys go out on the penalty kill, right? Kyle Connor. I mean, if you're not changing the personnel, you have to change something, don't you?
Well, and just quickly, it's interesting because I agree. Scott Billick talked about it in one of his answers, and the idea of using Wheeler and Scheifele or Kyle Connor. And it's like, to me, it's like you're burning these guys out and you don't really want them on the PK. And Gabriel Bork was supposedly brought in to be a PK specialist. How much time is he spending on the PK? Is he spending a lot of time on the PK? I don't know. I mean, maybe a little bit more now that Kopp's injured, but like, it just seems to me like it was funny because that was kind of one of the reasons, justifications, and we're not really seeing them that much, so.
It's certainly been a struggle for the Winnipeg Jets on the PK. Let's do the last one. Let's do coaching so far for the Winnipeg Jets. That's Paul Maurice. That's his assistant coaches behind the bench. I mean, so much of that has to do with the power play and the penalty kill and things of that nature. What grade would you give to the coaching of the Winnipeg Jets thus far through 41 games?
Yeah, I agree. Special teams is a big part of it. You know, overall, I think when you consider, and again, you said this, Drew, you didn't want to do this as an individual exercise. You wanted to look at the Jets kind of at that macro level. And I think when you consider all the injuries, and you know, there have been other teams that have had more injuries than the Jets, but you know, when you're talking about Brian Little, Dustin Byfuglien, you know, Dmitry Kulikov, Andrew Kopp, Matty Perreault, I mean, the Jets have had some significant injuries earlier in the season, you know, Mason Appleton. I mean, there have been a lot of injuries. You have to factor that in, and the fact that the Jets were, you know, second or third in the Central Division for the majority of that time, right? Because St. Louis has kind of held on to first for the majority. So I guess what I'm saying is, overall, you know, Paul Maurice, Jamie Compan, Huddy, the whole coaching staff, I'd probably give them, you know, about a B, because this is exactly where I thought they would be. I thought they would be, you know, either second, third, or fourth in the Central Division. I thought maybe they'd have a few more points, or they would look a little bit better defensively, or the special teams would look a little bit better. That's something that is definitely, I would say, a weakness, a big weakness of this team and of the coaching staff right now. The penalty kill, they haven't figured it out. So, you know, whatever bad grade you want to give, I mean, it's kind of useless at this point. We know the penalty kill is bad, but yes, the coaching staff does have to figure that out, and I think they know that.
To answer your question, Dave, 29 seconds a game Gabriel Bork is playing on the penalty kill so far this season. That's what he's averaging per game is 29 seconds.
No, so they need if Andrew Kopp back bad, especially for the PK. He is an effective penalty killer.
Your penalty kill shouldn't collapse because of one player's
absence.
No,
you're right. You're right. Absolutely. And that's what I'm talking about. Maybe, you know, strategy-wise, you know, structure-wise, you know, the Jets need to change something up. I mean, if, you know, the old saying, if you keep doing the same thing over and over again and you get the similar results, right? So, I mean, when your penalty kill has been at 50%, you know, the last little while, and it's at 70%, you're last in the league. So you might as well try something new.
Yeah. Mm.
I don't know what the answer. I mean, I'm not a hockey coach, so I don't have the answers for that. I don't get paid to do that. I guess I just get paid to talk about the Jets, but it's something that I think has to improve if this team wants to be a playoff team.
Quickly, Dave, last the word to you.
No, I would just say, like, the only thing that I think the coaching staff needs to do is be willing to adjust. I mean, Paul Maurice, we know, traditionally relies on veteran players. He needs to show an ability to adapt a little bit, be a little more flexible, get a guy like Sami Niku into the lineup. So I think overall, speaking to Ezzie's point about the injuries, that you have to factor that in. This team has been, you know, decimated by injuries. You lose a guy like Brian Little, and people can malign Brian Little all they want, but he still has a big part, I think, to play on a team. So and Dustin Byfuglien and all the absences. So I mean, I'd give them a C+. I think, like, overall, the special teams is like I said, one of them is trending in a positive, one is still pretty negative. So, you know, you're relying on Connor Hellebuck to be really good. Connor Hellebuck is really the backbone, the reason this team has been able to do what it's done. So is that coaching or is that just good goaltending? I think that gives these guys about a C+.
When we come back, we're going to look at the Jets' remaining schedule for the next 41 games. Sweden has just scored to make it 3-2. It's a high-scoring affair at the World Junior Hockey Championships. We'll keep you abreast of that. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.